God,
grant me the
serenity
to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and wisdom to know the difference. Amen.
The Simple Actions Group wishes to extend a warm welcome to all attendants today. These premises are non-smoking. Our group is meant to use this room and the restrooms exclusively. They're right outside this door. Newcomers, is there anyone here in their first 30 days of sobriety? We'd like to welcome you. All right. Welcome back, everyone. And for those on Zoom, someone will chat with you if you raise your hand. Is anyone for visiting from out of town? Welcome. Oh, welcome. Glad I asked that. Forward to the book, Alcoholics Anonymous. We have Alcoholics Anonymous are more than 100 men and women who have recovered from a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body. To show other alcoholics precisely how we have recovered is the main purpose of this book. For them, we hope these pages will prove so convincing that no further authentication will be necessary. We think this account of our experiences will help everyone to better understand the alcoholic. Many do not comprehend that the alcoholic is a very sick person. And besides, we are sure our way of living has its advantages for all. It is the purpose of this meeting to carry that clear message and focus precisely on how to recover from the illness of alcoholism by taking AA's Simple Actions. The format of this meeting is a big book, open big book step study. As a group, we recognize the power of one alcoholic identifying with another alcoholic, sharing their experience, strength, and hope from the book, Alcoholics Anonymous. This evening, we'll be discussing step one, part A. Please welcome our panel, Walt and Donald. I'll read the first paragraph on page XXVI, and then the panel will share for a few minutes each on the reading, and we'll do that until there's no more readings. Step one, we admitted we were powerless over alcohol, but our lives have become more manageable. First reading, page XXVI. The physician who, at our request, gave us this letter has been kind enough to enlarge upon his views in another statement which follows. In this statement, he confirms that we who have suffered alcoholic torture must believe that the body of the alcoholic is quite as abnormal as his mind. It did not satisfy us to be told that we could not control our drinking just because we were maladjusted to life, that we were in full fight from reality, or were outright mental defectives. These things were true to some extent, in fact, to a considerable extent with some of us. But we are sure our bodies were sickened as well. In our belief, any picture of the alcoholic which leaves out this physical factor is incomplete. The doctor's theory that we have an allergy to alcohol interests us. As laymen, our opinion as to its soundness may, of course, mean little. But as ex-problem drinkers, we can see that his explanation makes good sense. It explains many things for which we cannot otherwise account.
Walt? Hi, my name is Walter, and I'm an alcoholic.
Walter, Walter.
Just so you know, my sobriety date is 1-1-2015. And I can say that I love drinking. You know, it didn't always start off that way. It started off as a time to now do something stupid. And it was the excuse to do stupid things and, oh, I was drunk or I was blah, blah, blah. But it became something that I had to do or wanted to do all the time. I loved it that much. You know, the mind altering things that would happen. At first it brought some peace and serenity, and then it cost me all my peace and serenity, you know. I didn't know, no one explained to me when I was younger that it was going to have a cost besides just physically buying something, right? And that was with friends and colleagues and family that it took its toll on. Does it have an allergy? Yeah, I'm sure. I'm absolutely positive because I gave up drinking for some time when I wasn't needing to do it all the time. But it got to the point eventually when I drank that it was something that I thought about 24 hours a day. And when I gave up drinking for the first 3 months of not drinking, it is all I thought about. So that's what I have. Go ahead, sir.
Thank you. Donald Smith, alcoholic.
Hey, Donald.
Donald.
My sobriety date is October 17th, 1994. My home group is the West Kent Group of Alcoholics Anonymous. Many of you came in and supported our anniversary meeting last week, and we appreciate it. Saw many of you there. So glad to be invited to this. Thank you very much, Amy, for letting me do this. One of the things I always like about doing step one is that once, if we do step one, I don't have to spend a lot of time talking about my, I don't have to qualify myself much, because the first part is just real quick qualifications. You know, step one is one that I practiced with regularity from the time I was 17 until I quit drinking at 39. I was told I was an alcoholic when I was 17 years old. And I, you know, I didn't believe it. Part of me said, well, I'm just working on it, you know, so I'm like, I don't care. You know, I didn't care. I mean, I just figured that that's the way my life was going to be. And I was going to have a good time at it. And I made, you know, I got to a point in my life at 24 when I got up in the morning and looked at myself in the mirror and said, this is the way it's going to be. It's either going to be no drinking or killing myself drinking. And I said, I'll take the latter rather than the former. You know, there's a great line in the book and says, we reached that stage, there's a fork in the road, and die a miserable alcoholic death or seek spiritual help. And I chose death. It didn't kill me, but I almost did. It almost did. I didn't care. I was not a binge drinker. I drank every day. I loved it. And I think everybody here knows that they loved it too when they started. I mean, that's just the way it is. But I like to talk a little bit about, there's a great line in There's a Solution. It says, an alcoholic properly armed with the facts about themselves can gain the trust of anyone within a certain period of time after talking to them. And that's what you talk about when you're looking for a sponsor, someone that you can trust, you know what they're talking about. And so in that spirit, I want to talk a little bit about tonight about something that I hear all the time in Alcoholics Anonymous, which people mean well when they say it, but I think that they're not, you know, the word properly armed is what we want to, the word properly is what I want to talk about. I hear all the time that my problem is not alcohol. My problem is me. And I get that, you know, I mean, there's not a single one of us in here that aren't mental defectives. Or, I mean, it has a list of them right here, which when we sat down with my sponsor, we went through it. Was I in full flight from reality? Yes. Was I outright mental defective? Yes. Was I maladjusted to life? Of course. Life was maladjusted to me in my mind, you know, and these are not reasons why I couldn't drink. These were not reasons why I could not control my drinking. Because for me, when I start drinking, something happens. And it doesn't matter what the reason is, where my mindset might be, when I put alcohol in my system, I click on. You know, I used to go out and get drunk. I would stay out till 3 or 4 o'clock in the morning all the time, and then get up and go to work in the morning. And I would kind of fight my way through the morning till about lunchtime. Then I'd go out and have a few beers with lunch. And then I'd come back to work. And then I'd go out tired, dog tired, at 6 o'clock with my buddies. We go to a bar. And I'd sit down and I'd have a drink. And next thing I know, I was waking up. I got all this energy. I started looking around the room for things to do, you know, people to see, all that stuff. And my friends were drinking, and what was happening to them? They were getting sleepy. They could feel it. They were getting tired. And by, you know, an hour or two, they had to go home because they had families. I'm feeling it. I got to drive. Well, I don't know about you, but feeling it was what I was trying to do. And if I could feel this now, imagine how I'm going to feel at 9 o'clock or 10:30, right? That's what I got energy. And that is an allergy, because that is my body acting abnormally to putting alcohol in my system, regardless of the reason. I'll never forget, there's a guy that used to pick me up when I first got sober. I didn't have a car. I didn't have a bicycle. I didn't have nothing. And he would take me to meetings. And one day he got me in the car and he says, Donald, why do you drink? Well, because, and I gave him all these reasons. She left me. I left her. I lost a job. I got a job. Whatever those things are, you know. I wasn't feeling good. I was feeling great. You know, I was wanting to celebrate something. I was depressed about something. Whatever, all those things that I rationalize and justify what I do, right? But none of that was the truth. And he told me, he goes, that's not true. You drink because you're an alcoholic. That's what we do as alcoholics. And I'm telling you, you know, I was more complicated than that. You know, I had all these things that were going on in my life and I just knew that if I just quit drinking, I would be okay. The book does say that the problem centers in the mind, because once an alcoholic stops drinking, you would think they would stop altogether, right? It says problem centers in the mind. But that is just a third of the problem. I got three thirds. I got a physical problem, a spiritual problem, and a mental problem. I have a mental illness. You know, the book doesn't say, step two doesn't say that I'm sane. It says I'm insane. And I had to learn what that meant. But in this case, I just wanted to say that when people say that alcohol is not their problem, then I think that sends the wrong message to newcomers. If I'm sitting here and I'm brand new and I know the subtlety of it, people like being subtle, you know, they want to have a little, sounds a little different, you know, like people say, doesn't mention in the book about not drinking. Well, every time I get a sponsee, I tell them to go home and read the doctor's opinion. And the doctor says quite clearly in the doctor's opinion, and I think we're going to talk about it tonight, abstinence is all we can have is what is, oh yeah, here it is. The only relief is an abstinence. That means not drinking. So people come here not to drink. I mean, it's kind of a weird twist to say, well, we don't mention not drinking in the book. Well, we don't mention a lot, but that's why we're here. So in any event, the theory that I have an allergy explains a lot, and explained a lot to me, because I can't tell you how many friends I had that would drink with me and then they would stop drinking with me because I would start going and they wouldn't. And some of them would drink with me for 6 months, some for a year or two. They all left because all of them got tired of doing it. Their lives moved on. My life revolved around it. And yes, I was feeling weird. And yes, it treated certain things inside of me that we'll talk about at some other time, right? We do it when we do that. We talk about the steps. But the initial thing is I'm powerless over alcohol. And so the final thing I'll say, when I got sober, I was taught that the first step has three parts. And it says, we admitted we're powerless over alcohol, and that would be physical and mental. As what we talked about earlier, once I stop, I can't. That's all I think about doing. You know, I'm so weird about it. I don't want to walk into a 7-Eleven. I avoid the beer aisles, you know, in the grocery store for years. Why is that? You know, that's a mental problem. But I'm also physically powerless. That once I start, I don't stop. And then the third part is the spiritual part, the spiritual side, which says my life has become unmanageable. And that's what all the steps are supposed to approach. All the steps for me treated those three problems inside of me, physical, mental, and spiritual. And I do believe that any picture of the alcoholic that leaves out the physical factor is incomplete. Because if alcohol is not my problem, I can sit here for 5 years or 10 years and then walk out of here and I'll be okay. I'll be okay. I can have another drink. And that is simply not the case. The longer I'm without a drink, the closer I am to one. I don't know about you, but when I was drinking an awful lot, half gallons a day at the end. And if I went back out, I would be right back in that boat within two or three weeks, maybe 2 or 3 weeks. The problem with that is that my body back then was had alcohol in the system all the time. It was used to it. Putting that much in me now would kill me. That's how people die from alcoholism when they stop for a long time. Any event, that's all I got for you. Thanks.
Cool. Our next reading is going to be on page XXVIII. You believe, and so suggested a few years ago, that the action of alcohol on these chronic alcoholics is a manifestation of an allergy, that the phenomenon of craving is limited to this class and never occurs in the average temperate drinker. These allergic types can never safely use alcohol in any form at all, and once having formed the habit, found they cannot break it, once having lost their self-confidence, their reliance upon things human, their problems pile up on them and become astonishingly difficult to solve.
Yeah. Hi. Yeah, and I'm Walter. An alcoholic. A few years ago, that the action of alcohol in these chronic alcoholics was a manifestation of an allergy. Yep. I thought about drinking all the time. I wanted to drink all the time. And like I said before, it started off as something that's fun. I mean, when we were in college, we used to say to ourselves, why play video games when you can drink and drive? You know, it seemed to be the thing to do.
Yeah.
But yeah. But it became something like an allergy in the sense of, you know, if you touch poison ivy and the oil gets on your skin, you know, you get itchy. If you have an allergy to hay fever and you're around hay fever, you interact with it. My interaction with alcohol became quite negative. It became unmanageable. You know, it got to the point where that's all I wanted to do. It's what I thought about. And if something else deviated or prevented me from doing it, it made me angry. Right. And when I first got into AA, I used to think one of the reasons why I drank was because I was maladjusted, as it says, to life, you know, and it was one of the things that gave some peace and serenity. Of course, it caused chaos as well, because I was chaos, right? We're reading about the first step here, you know, Matt, I'm powerless over alcohol, you know, as was mentioned, you know, it's the three things. It's physical, mental and spiritual. Well, I'm powerless over everything. That's what I ended up having to admit. I couldn't really control anything in my life. And I was trying to control that or deal with that with my allergy of alcoholism, my allergy of just wanting to drink, numb my head, shut it off, move on, and then have to wake up the next day and do it all over again, you know. But it's what I wanted to do. It's not what I wanted to do. It's what I was compelled to do. I'll give you an example recently. My son just graduated from, he's in the Marines, and he just graduated from OCS school, and he was doing Zyn, you know, the nicotine pouch. And he said to me, he goes, hey, you used to do the Copenhagen when you were real young. Why don't you try one of these? I tried one and it, you know, messed up my head a little bit. I can tell you that I have allergies to something that mess up my head, like alcohol or something like that, because it's what I thought about for the next 24 hours. When I went into 7-Eleven, oh, there's that. Oh, I'm not doing that. And it's the same thing, you know, it's breaking something, but it takes effort and time, and I have to give myself up to something else in order to do that, because I could not do it on my own. I have a grandfather that died from alcoholism, and, you know, he abstained. He swore, you know, went to church, abstained. A year later, he died, because the commitment was over that year. On that day, he went out, you know, and he killed himself. Not intentionally, but he just drank himself to death. You know, so I have that allergy. I have that uncontrolled urge. If I start, I'm not going to stop. You know, maybe it won't be the first time, but it'll be within one or two times. Right. And when I said that I have the allergy of now it's time to do something stupid, I don't want to live up there anymore in the stupidity that I used to do. You know, an example. College, I broke into the president's office to steal his stationery so I could write notes home to the kids who lived on the floor with me. I thought that would be good. I was drunk. It was a good idea, you know. Those ideas got worse over time. So that's just an example from the beginning. Thanks.
Thank you. I just love this because it says, first of all, the reason why I love this so much is that it tells me exactly who I am. it just blows my mind because I can never quite figure. I mean, I'll never forget. I was probably 18. It was Christmas Day. Christmas Eve, Christmas morning. And I used to ride a bicycle when I was 18. I had a little rack on the back of it with a bungee cord. I would put my bottles in there. It would be nice and snug. I could go out and get drunk. And I had a whole bunch of these bottles that I had. And I was drunker than crap. I was talking to this guy that was about this much taller than me. And he was so drunk, he could hardly stand up. And I was looking at him and I'm thinking, what is wrong with you? This is the best thing I've ever done in my life. I was just like, I just love the way I felt. You know, I heard this guy say once that alcoholics drink to fit into life and drug addicts take drugs to escape. And when I thought about that a lot, first thing I heard that, I thought that was just bull. You know, I mean, you hear these little quaint little phrases, but the more I thought about it over time, when I first started drinking, I felt disconnected from the world around me. Right. So when I started drinking, I felt connected to it. Right. Later on, I drank for oblivion because I had all these other problems that had piled up. So I was addicted to it at that point, too. But alcoholism starts way before you're addicted. You can be an alcoholic and not be addicted to alcohol. All right. And why is that? Because the action of alcohol on chronic alcoholics is the manifestation of an allergy. It creates the phenomenon of craving and is limited to this class and never occurs in the average temperate drinker. Never occurs in the average. It always occurs in people like us, like me. Regardless of how stable I appear to be on the outside, you know, this AA started with people that were rich. they had lots of money. They were stockbrokers and bankers. Ebby, who was Bill's sponsor, was from a prominent family in Albany. They all came from places that when you looked at them, you would assume they were okay, and they were not. Some of them were not. All right. It's because alcoholism doesn't care how rich you are, what color you are, what sex you are. What alcoholism is not me. You know, I mean, it's a lot of things, including the mind, but a chronic alcoholic is limited. The limit to the chronic alcoholic is the phenomenon of craving. And what that means is that for me, when I put alcohol in my system, right, I get started, I don't stop. All right. Now, early, I get drunk on five beers. I could get drunk on three beers. First time I got drunk, I drank three tall boys, PBRs. And of course, I'm alcoholic. So the first time I drank, someone had said, if you go run around the block, you'll get more drunk. So I went and run around the block because three wasn't enough, even the first time. All right. And that's how I drank. I drank as much as I could. And I was always running. It was really amazing to go back and look at my life. I go back. I was always moving. I was not sitting home drunk. I was driving around drunk all the time. I got seven DUIs. They're in different states. So, but I just did what I wanted to do. I mean, I got kicked off a train in Pittsburgh for being drunk at 3 o'clock in the morning. All right. Because when I got started at 7 o'clock in St. Louis, 7 o'clock in the morning in St. Louis, I was drunk by the time I got to Ohio. Why is that? A phenomenon of craving kicks in and boom, what happens? I don't stop. I can never safely use alcohol in any form. And it says the habit, once I form a habit. So the phenomenon, the craving happens before I have a habit, according to what the doctor is saying, right? I know how, I knew a guy that would get drunk and he would get drunk as crap for 3 weeks, stop and never see him again for 6 months. He'd show back up again, clean and sober, and he'd start drinking again. He'd be out. He was always drunk for the whole 3 days because once he started drinking, he didn't stop. And then I found I couldn't break it because I didn't want to. I had all the reasons why it was okay for me to do this, you know, and not, most of them were like, it's your fault. You don't. I am who I am. You got to love me for who I am, right? my ex-wife said to me once, she says, you're drunk all the time. I said, you met me in a bar for crying out loud. What did you expect you were getting? And I said, having lost her self-confidence, I knew a long time that I was not going to be able to quit drinking because I didn't want to, number one. And number two, the couple times I tried, it wasn't worth it. I didn't want to do it. And I had, of course, I had lost all my reliance on things human. I was an atheist. I didn't believe in people. I didn't hardly believe in people. And my problems did pile up on me, and it became astonishingly difficult to solve. And when I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, one of my sponsors sat down and told me that I was bankrupt. It was going to take me in all forms of bankruptcy, spiritual, mental. It was going to take me at least 5 years to get back to zero. He was wrong. It took me six. So, any of that. That's about all I got for now. Thanks.
Thank you. Our next reading is also on XXVIII, Roman numeral 28. Men and women drink essentially because they like the effect produced by alcohol. The sensation is so elusive that while they admit it is injurious, they cannot after a time differentiate the true from the false. To them, their alcoholic life seems the only normal one. They are restless, irritable, and discontented, unless they can again experience the sense of ease and comfort which comes at once by taking a few drinks. Drinks which they see others taking with impunity. After they have succumbed to the desire, as so many do, and the phenomenon of craving develops, they pass through the well-known stages of a spree, emerging remorseful, with a firm resolution not to drink again. This is repeated over and over, and unless this person can experience an entire psychic change, there is very little hope of his recovery. On the other hand, strange as this may seem, to those who do not understand, once a psychic change has occurred, the very same person who seemed doomed, who had so many problems he despaired of ever solving them, suddenly finds himself easily able to control his desire for alcohol, the only effort necessary being that required to follow a few simple rules. Okay.
Thanks. The phenomenon of drinking produced a cessation is so elusive that while they admit it is injurious, they cannot after a time differentiate the time from the thing. Yeah. I ended up loving drinking. I loved it. I was restless, irritable, and discontent. Life absolutely sucked. You know, I couldn't believe where things were in life. How do I explain this? Brought up to do the next right thing. And I couldn't believe when people wouldn't do the next right thing, it made me restless, irritable, and discontent, which meant that I was judging everyone and anything around me, which made me restless, irritable, and discontent. And drinking helped solve that problem, which also created more restlessness, irritability, and discontent, because I wasn't bringing peace or anything to anything. I was, I had a lot of arguments then. I'll tell you the difference between a discussion and an argument and a discussion. I want to hear your point of view and I want you to hear mine and we'll come up with something and we'll move forward. And an argument, you're fucking wrong. And I was in an argumentative mood at that time, which meant that I was always right and you were always wrong. If you were going to confront me, that was the way it was going to be. And the drinking was supposed to be something that gave me some, you know, sensibility, but it didn't, because the people I was drinking around, which was family, saw it, and they saw all the irritability that came out as a result of all of that. And I couldn't stop it at that point. I mean, I couldn't drink with impunity. I couldn't just have one, put it down and walk away from it or anything else like that. And I tried. We went on a trip one time, a work trip to New Orleans. I was with my buddy at the bar. I had a couple of martinis, well, actually more than a couple. And he said, let's put it this way. Yeah. And there were people that we were competing with jobs and stuff like that, heavy marine construction. And they saw what an asshole. And that's what I presented to them of my company, at the bar that night. It destroyed more than it ever, it just ended up destroying more than it ever gave, which is, and I yet would can, I knew it would destroy, I would be remorseful, I'm never going to do this again. And then I would. And again. And again, and the phenomenon would be, I remember I would drink box wine. I'll share this. I was drinking box wine at one point on Friday night, and when it came in 4 liters. And I remember Saturday morning, I'd have to get up early, so I'd be the first one up, so I'm not hungover. No one could say I was hungover. And I went and grabbed the box, and I'm like, fuck, it's empty. How do I hide this? And how do I get more for tonight, to get through the weekend? And, my thought process isn't what I did to anyone else, what I had said to anyone else. It was all about me and what could I do for me at that point, and that was it made everyone around me suffer. My kids suffered, everyone, like they walked on eggshells. Because of who I was going to be. The other thing I will say is when I did try to control my drinking, I used an Excel spreadsheet to sit there and say, hey, I've drank this and this. Hey, I didn't get so sloshed, or I did get sloshed. And what I found out was that it was completely inconsistent. sometimes it was a couple of drinks, bombed. Other times it took 10, bombed. But it wasn't always the same amount that got the same results. So it wasn't something, what it became knowledgeable to me was that I couldn't control it at all. And that's when I realized I have a problem, and I cannot control this at all. I didn't know how to abstain completely until I really came here and went full throttle into this program. Thank you.
Isn't it self-evident that men and women drink essentially because they like the effect produced by alcohol? I thought that was the stupidest thing I've ever heard in my life. Well, of course people like that. That's why you drink. And this is just like normal people. Everybody who has a drink likes the way it feels for the most part. Although some will only have one, some will have a half. You ever gone out with somebody and they just drank a half a drink in an hour? I want to strangle them.
That's abuse.
When are you going to go to the bathroom so I can finish that for you and get you another one? But I love this. It says, why they admit it's injurious. Oh, yeah, I can admit that. Sure, I wrecked a car on Hampton Boulevard. I was going underneath the 21st Street underpass. I was going to Old Dominion. It was in the 1970s. And I hit going underneath the thing, and there was a big curb right there. I hit it, broke the wheel of my car, went across the street, went through the glass and cut my face off. I cut this artery back here. I was laying in the hospital, almost bled to death. Yeah, I know. Then one time I was down in Florida and I fell off a second floor of room. A balcony backwards and landed face down and broke my wrist and couldn't get up because I lost my key. Couldn't get in my apartment because I lost my keys and I'm trying to get up. I had to bring my feet and my legs up and rock myself back because I couldn't push myself up. I was shaking like a leaf. I've been drinking Drambuie and scotch It was great.
That's awesome.
I don't know how many I had, but I spent a lot of money there. But I knew it was hurting me. But here it says they can, after time, they cannot differentiate the true from the false. Now, how true is that? Because the whole time this is happening to me, I'm thinking it's just part of the game. You know, it's what we do. This is what the price we have to pay to do what we're doing. This is the price I'm paying to do what I'm doing. So it's no big deal. I'll be okay. It's not that big of a deal. As a matter of fact, they the ones that are telling me this is a big deal are wrong. I don't want to hear what they got to say. I don't want to talk to them. I was right, but I couldn't tell that. I didn't know the difference between the true and the false. I thought my life was going up. The trajectory was up. It was actually going down, and I couldn't see it. Either I wouldn't see it or I couldn't see it. You can take your pick, whichever one of those two words you want. I didn't believe it, period. And when you have that attitude, it then brings into a lot of other untrue things that I believe. Like I drank for this, I drank for that, I did this, I did that. It says that my alcoholic life is the only normal one. That's what that was normal for me, and I thought it should be normal for you. I did not know that people who I did not know that only alcoholics got the phenomenon of craving. I thought everybody felt this way when they started drinking. They were just wussies and were trying to go out and do what they wanted to. You know, they were going to make money and stay home and do stuff. Who wants to do that? Right? I didn't know. I didn't know they weren't having the same reaction that I was having. And because I was my life and my reaction, I thought I was somehow better than them. Is that not a false belief? Talking about being judgmental. I'm like, I just didn't know. And then it says, and I'll just say this. And even today, after all this time, my alcoholic life is the only normal one I know. I am an alcoholic. That's my normal life. This is what I do to stay sober. And this is normal for me. And I'm telling you, I wouldn't do it. And I wouldn't have it any other way, drunk or sober, right? Then it says, you know, I felt restless, irritable, and discontented in my first early days of drinking, when I was trying not to drink every day and all that kind of stuff. I felt all that. But because I started drinking on a maintenance level, I call it, you know, every day, morning, noon, and night, 7 days a week, I never felt that very much. I was just kind of drunk all the time, you know, and I'd get up in the morning, have a couple shots and be there, and lunchtime would roll around, have a couple more shots, and then get me through the day, and then the afternoon a couple, and I'd go out and have some dinner, and then go out and get drunk at night. That's what I did. I did that for at least 5 years. And it says ease and comfort, which comes at once by taking a few drinks, which I see others taking with impunity. That's a spiritual sickness. If I look at other people and I see them doing something with impunity, I'm mad about that. Why can't I do that? Why are you going to give me grief? Why are you giving me grief when Bill's 10 times worse than I am? Right? I'm always trying to deflect. But I deflect in my mind. Because when I do that, I start thinking about how horrible I'm being treated. That's a spiritual problem. Yeah. So I always succumb to the desire. That was my life. And it says the phenomenon of craving develops and it passed through the well-known stages of a spree. I would wake up in the morning remorseful about what I had done the night before, but I didn't really change anything. I didn't really care. I was feeling bad. I had a headache. You know, I was thirsty, really thirsty. And my experience is that I needed this entire psychic change so I could have some hope of recovery. And I had people tell me it was probable that might not work for me either. On the other hand, we do not understand It says, on the other hand, it may seem that those who do not understand, once a psychic change has occurred, the very same person who seemed doomed, who had many so many problems, he despaired of ever solving them, finds himself easily able. Control his desire to drink. I don't like that little phrasing, but that's a drunk. That's a non-alcoholic talking. Dr. Silkworth is not an alcoholic, so he says, I have a desire to control alcohol. My desire for alcohol. If any of you know the book, the 10-step promises say that the desire for alcohol has been removed. It doesn't even exist for me anymore. So it's not a question of controlling anything. It just is God's removed it from me. And that's the beautiful thing about Alcoholics Anonymous and working the steps and doing the stuff that I'm asked to do. Oh, I'm sorry. Only effort being necessary to follow a few rules. I have to say it, of course. There are rules in Alcoholics Anonymous. You want to get sober, it's suggested that you take, that you do what it says in the book and do the suggested steps. But the phraseology is not what it appears to be today. They were trying to say this is what we did, and we suggest you do the same thing we did. And if you do that with their rules, they're simple rules, but if you take them and do them to the best of your ability on a daily basis, well, let me rephrase that. If I take these and do these things on a daily basis, my life changes. And I'm an alcoholic, so my life started to change. I wanted it all. Just like when I was drinking, I wanted it all. You know, I want everything AA has to offer. And this thing about sobriety and this thing about my life and getting it back and doing the thing. I love that. And so you took that attitude, that desire, and I applied it to Alcoholics Anonymous. But you got to follow the rules. I would take nightly inventory. And I did it for months and months and months. And my sponsor says to me once, he goes, have you taken nightly inventory? I said, yeah. Who's listening to it? I said, nobody. He goes, in Alcoholics Anonymous, we do all the steps, not the ones we want to do. Meaning I wasn't doing step five. I wasn't talking to him about what I was finding in my daily and my nightly review. So I just wanted to say that because that happens a lot. You know, people say, well, I've had this one resentment for 15 years. It doesn't work that way. You got to be current and clean. At least that's my experience. I shouldn't say you, my experience. I got to be current and clean. Anyway, I'm preaching. Thank you.
Moving on to page XXX. Roman numeral 30. All these and many others have one symptom in common. They cannot start drinking without developing the phenomenon of craving. This phenomenon, as we have suggested, may be the manifestation of an allergy, which differentiates these people and sets them apart as a distinct entity. It has never been, by any treatment with which we are familiar, permanently eradicated. The only relief we have to suggest is entire absence.
Thanks. I would agree with that. When, you know, no one comes into AA because, hey, life is great. I just think I'm just going to, you know, stop drinking. I need AA. You know, usually there's a bottom, right, that we have to overcome something. And I knew in my particular bottom, I decided I needed to stop drinking and everything. I had family members who were continuing to dig my bottom for me for the next couple of years. And so if I drank, I knew that the way my mind works is, oh, you think I'm this? You think I'm that? Let me go prove to you wrong. Or let me show you what that really is like. Because I believe, you know, I broke into the president's office to steal his stationery. I got caught. I want to solve this problem the way I want to solve this problem, which has nothing to do with if I got to do something wrong, I'm going to do something wrong. You know, I don't care. I want my way, how I'm going to do it, because I am restless, irritable, and discontent. And if you've made me, if you've hurt me, I want to hurt you back. You know? So when I got in here, it has never been by any, the only relief we have to suggest is entire abstinence. I knew if I drank, I was going to make my life much, much worse than it was at that time. I had to abstain completely. And the only way I could do that was to, you know, hey, I'm powerless over alcohol. I had to do these steps and I had to do them quickly. I remember my first sponsor, I sat there with him. I'm like, okay, let's go. We can do all 12. We got a day. You know, and he's like, no, we take your time, take your time, take your time. You know, and it didn't take that much time, but I had to practice it because the restlessness and irritability, I mean, I didn't know how to deal with life. Right. And I couldn't drink because that would have only made it worse. I had seen the light, my eyes had been opened that what I had done to myself. And that was the thing that I, you know, the eyes were being opened to. I created, or at least was present for all my problems. Right. And so if I drank again, I was going to create or make them worse. So I had to practice abstinence first and then dive into the program to get the relief I needed inside the program. Hope that makes sense.
Thank you. I'll be quick. We got one more paragraph to finish. I'll just say it one more time. The phenomenon of craving is what separates us from everybody else. Gamblers, drug addicts, we all have the same mental problem and we all have the same spiritual problem, but we don't have the same physical problem. And because of that, we'll have different experiences. I will have a different experience from a drug addict in what they do and how they're illness manifests itself in the real world. I've been in meetings before where they've got people who are heroin addicts speak, you know, raise their hand and they speak, and they're talking about shooting up drugs in the bathroom of a rundown gas station. And I feel sorry for that. I think that's a horrible thing, but I don't have that experience. How can I find someone I can work with and identify with if I'm hanging around people who don't have the same illness that I have and don't have the same life experiences that I have? So it's an important thing to remember. The phenomenon of craving is the physical side of this problem. The mental obsession is the mental side, when I think about it all the time or I obsess about other stuff. And the spiritual malady is that I can know all this stuff about myself, always know it, and I can't do anything about it. I don't have the physical power, I don't have the spiritual power to stop myself from implementing what I already know. It's all in the book. You got to just read it. It's there. I'll give you the cliff notes, but it wouldn't help you. And again, the only relief is abstinence. And it's, anyway, that's all I got for now. Thanks.
Thanks.
Yeah. And our final reading is on page 152. We have shown how we got out from under. You say, yes, I'm willing, but am I to be consigned to a life where I shall be stupid, boring, and dumb, like some righteous people I see? I know I must get along without liquor, but how can I? Have you a sufficient substitute? Yes, there is a substitute, and it is vastly more than that. It is a fellowship of alcohol in Alcoholics Anonymous. There you will find release from care, boredom, and worry. Your imagination will be fired. Life will mean something to you at last. The most satisfactory years of your existence lie ahead. Thus we find the fellowship, and so will you.
Hi, I'm Walter, an alcoholic. I like that portion of it. So I'm going to describe, you know, we all have friends, right? So my friends, I have acquaintances and friends, right? I thought I had friends outside of AA. And when I would get, this is my example, I would go up and talk to them like, man, this is what's going on with me. And my friends would sit there and say, man, you're getting fucked, you know? And then I go up to my friends in AA and I say, man, this is what's going on to me. And you know what they say? They sit there and say, what'd you do to cause it? You know, take responsibility for your life. Well, when things settled out and I was 5 years sober, I ended up buying a house and I had to move out of where I was. The people who showed up were the people from AA, not my friends. My friends from AA, my home group, my you know, they've become my family. I sail on sailboats. I race on sailboats out of Hampton. And, you know, at the end of every big regatta or something like that, they're always drinking. Sometimes they're drinking during the race, and I don't have to participate in that. But it's shortly after we hit the dock that I leave. I'm always invited back. I'm always included. But I leave because I don't need to have that phenomenon that they're going through at that time, you know. And I can be around anything and not have to participate in things anymore. You know, we talked about it being initially about restless, irritable, and discontent. One of the things I've learned in going through all 12 steps and practicing this for the last decade is that I don't have to give my, you know, the power of God. I don't have to give them the power or the irritability. I don't have to let things or people irritate me anymore. I used to give that away all the time, you know, and which meant that I had nothing. You know, and you see it when people, an example of that would be you're driving down the road, you get cut off and you get mad, right? And you want to give them the fingers and stuff like that. Well, now that person just controlled you. I don't have to do that anymore in life. And I've learned that here. I'm powerless over everything, but I learned how to handle life by having I have a spiritual malady. When I'm properly set in the spiritualness of life, praying and stuff like that, practicing doing the next right thing, not making situations worse, life is not so bad, you know. And it's amazing, you know, the Fellowship in Alcoholics Anonymous, the most satisfactory years of your existence lie ahead. I can tell you the people that I hang out with and I see where they've come from. I love to go if you're new to AA, I suggest going to speaker meetings because you need to hear the bottoms that everyone has and where everyone is now. And the amazing thing about knowing people in AA is that you see that they've been able to walk through crap in life, you know, and they get to where they are. But other things, life gets lifey for you. And they still are able to walk through the crap of life and not have to drink and not be miserable. And I got to tell you, it's attraction, not promotion. I want that. If you can walk through the crap of life and not be miserable, I want what you got. How did you do it? And that's what attracted me to AA. That's what keeps me in AA. And that's what I want to present and represent myself. Thank you.
Thank you. When I became willing to be consigned to being stupid, boring, and glum, that's when I came to Alcoholics Anonymous. I seriously thought that's what was going to happen to me. I was not going to do it, but I had to quit drinking. I had a twin brother who died from alcoholism, threw up and breathed in his own mess and asphyxiated himself. So I was not going to go down that road. And because I was an atheist, I was figuring I would have to become a righteous person, but I didn't care what that meant. I just wanted to get sober, right? So that was my bottom. I was committed to becoming stupid, boring, and glum. And guess what? I've succeeded. He shoots, he scores. But it says, do I have a substitute? And the substitute is the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous and everything that that means. You know, you were talking about responsibility earlier. I have a responsibility to the fellowship to help maintain that fellowship, to help become of service to that fellowship, to do things that I don't really want to do, but I do them, and I learn a little bit more about sobriety. Remember I said earlier, I don't want just a little bit of it. I want it all. I want to get all that stuff. And so I am released from care, boredom, and worry. My imagination has been fired up. How does life mean something that lasts? Absolutely. How is that? Well, you know, one of the lines in the book, my favorite part, is that I'm given the opportunity to avert misery and death for people. How powerful is that? Well, how much meaning can you get by being able to sit down and help somebody get a spiritual experience? You can't make them do it, but you can show them how to do it, and I can show them how I did it and help them do that. And I'm telling you, that blew my mind. And the most satisfactory years of my life lie ahead. And that has been absolutely true too. And when I find a fellowship, I have to grab onto it. I have to do what I was instructed to do. And when I'm asked to volunteer to do something, I do it. You know, I had at one point, a long time ago, I had like 8 people I was sponsoring, and I had someone else ask me to sponsor them. And I went to my sponsor. I said, I can't do that. I don't have the time. They said, we always say yes to an AA request. Always. God will make the time. I didn't believe that. I thought that was the biggest bunch of bull. But you know what? God made the time. I ended up with 2 more and doing some other stuff. Why is that? Because this is a spiritual thing. And if I'm here to do something, I need to do it. And being a service to Alcoholics Anonymous and practicing the 12th step, carrying the message and living it in my life is a part of who I am today. And I wouldn't have it any other way. And I would hope that you all would try to at least try it. You know, what do they say? We'll give you back your boredom and your everything else that boredom. I couldn't even get out of bed. I was so drunk all the time. I was sleeping with a bottle because I could roll over and take a shot and go back to bed, go back to sleep. And I got a life today. So I owe everything I got. I owe to Alcoholics Anonymous and the people in this room, people that have moved on, who passed away. So I want to thank you for inviting me again, Amy and David and Travis, appreciate it. You did a good job too, Ben.
Absolutely.
Thank you. Pass the Civics Tradition baskets. Gary's going to do that for us. Thank you. Every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. While contributions cover each group's rent and other expenses, the Civics Tradition is essential at every level of AA service. It is both a privilege and a responsibility for groups and the members to ensure that not only their group, but also their intergroup, central office, local services, district area, and general service office remain self-supporting. This keeps AA free from outside influences that might divert us from our primary purpose, to help the other alcoholic who still suffers. A word about safety. Our group endeavors to provide a safe meeting place for all attendees and encourages each person here to contribute to fostering a secure and welcoming environment in which our meetings can take place. Are there any AA-related announcements? No? Okay, thank you. Simple actions of the home group. If you are interested in joining our home group or need a sponsor, please hang out after the meeting. Home group members, raise your hands. Okay. Literature is available right over there, my left or right, by the door. Sponsorship in AA is yours for the asking. We urge you, do not delay. If you have questions or would like additional information about sponsorship, I'll be available right here after the meeting. Please feel free to talk to me, or if you're shy, you can send an email to info@simpleactions.net. Reminders, smokers, please use the butt can provided outside. Stay well away from the church doors. All meeting audio recordings and upcoming events are posted on our website, simpleactions.net. All are invited and encouraged to join us for fellowship at the meeting after the meeting that will be held at Cafe Stella. In closing, let's thank the panel one more time. And after the Lord's Prayer, everyone will be able to come up and say thank you. And David has agreed to read the last two paragraphs of page 164.
Everybody, I'm an alcoholic named David.
David.
Hey, David.
Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously, you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right. Great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then.
Thank you. And we have a next way of closing.
We have a grand way of
closing. It's grand.
It's great. And we'll close with the Lord's Prayer. Our Father, who art in
heaven, give us today our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, the power, and the glory, forever and ever. Amen.
Amen.
Awesome. Oh, yeah.